Welcome to the Danger Room, a place to prepare for the opponents you are yet to face.
Welcome to the second of our top four season four interviews. This time I've got with me Morgan Reed. Welcome, Morgan.
Thanks, Jacob. It's good to be back and good to be talking to you again.
Yeah, absolutely. You say again, that leads directly onto the first question. So this is the last three seasons have all had top cuts. You've made top cut every time and you've made top four every time. Clearly, you're a very strong player, but are there any insights you can give, any insights you've got as to why it is maybe that you keep being so consistently successful?
That's a very good question. I think my success from making the cuts, I mean, there's fortune involved, of course, but there is a level of consistency there that you can't write off just to good luck. And, you know, an observation compared to the people I normally play with is the amount of effort and reps and thought I probably put in versus other people. So, and that's just talking about the sort of local mates or the Australian meta, I suppose. So I can't comment on the rest of the world, but, you know, I attribute the amount of effort that you put into something generally equals the amount of success or perceived success you have in something. So I'll have a wonderfully understanding wife and family that allow me a bit of space to do these things, you know, most nights during the week after the kids have gone to bed. And I'll put a lot of effort, reps and thought and rehearsal into the games. And so I think for me, that's why I've been fortunate enough to make the top cut every season so far.
So if we take your most recent game, your top eight game, how much preparation and rehearsal did you do for that game?
That was it, yeah. So that one, I played three games against it with an opponent, talking through the opponent's, I suppose, optimal moves that we sort of both agreed on, a bit of a collective, so me versus myself and someone else, I suppose. Had three games of that using each different secure that I thought would come out and did the most likely extracts. So three games in, I did a couple of, I suppose I call them round one rehearsals. And I think that's very important. I spoke about on a recent podcast that I think round one rehearsal into especially hide muscle plays is very important to have clarity in your own mind about how round one looks like, if you have priority with hide muscle and if you don't. So I do a couple of those generally by myself, just about 10 minutes, just to, hey, where do I set up? And then based on the setup and my opponent's optimal setup or worst case setup for me, what are my best tactic cards to try and counter or mitigate it? So, you know, three games and a couple of round one setups for that last top eight game.
And through the league, is that kind of typical for what you did for all your opponents?
No. I generally, the Swiss rounds, I'll try and get a game in, but I generally not as focused on the Swiss rounds just because, well, certainly the last two seasons, you know, this one with Brotherhood and the season before with Black Order, I've still been learning my roster and learning my squad. So I'm just have more general games. But I found when I get towards the cuts, it requires more focus because you're playing better players who are also, you know, very talented players and have their own rehearsals and preparation. So the amount of effort required to compete and potentially defeat the opponents is much higher than the Swiss rounds I've found, generally speaking. So Swiss rounds, generally about just learning my roster and learning my squad and looking at certainly the upcoming releases and changes and things I need to be aware of. But when it gets to top cut, it's very focused, and I probably won't do any casual pickup games that are not targeted against my upcoming opposition.
Okay, let's dig into your roster a little bit. So talk me through how you went from Black Order last season to Brotherhood this season.
Well, Black Order, I mean, we spoke about it last season. I really enjoyed playing Black Order. It was a real journey that I just enjoyed watching the characters and the roster and the squads develop and the play style develop and clarify, you know, crystallize in my mind how I thought they would function well. And when it got to the end of the season, I was quite, fatigued on the roller coaster that is Black Order. They can be situationally very, very powerful and just steamroll your opponent. But other times, if the dice don't quite go your way or don't roll, you know, some good hits, especially on the attack dice, if they're not consistently good, they can be very frustrating and a bit of an emotional roller coaster. So I was a bit burnt out on that journey with Black Order. And it just sort of happened at the time of release of the Mutants. And you know, the big expensive high threat bad guys is highly appealing to me. And Magneto was one of my favorite characters in the sort of X-Men, you know, pretty average movies, but, you know, and the actor, I forget his name. What's the actor's name for Magneto?
Fassbender or Ian McKellen.
Fassbender, yeah, that's it. Excellent actor. And I loved watching him as Magneto. So when I saw Magneto's card and I liked him from the movies, I thought, hey, this guy looks great. What can we do with his sort of mediocre supporting cast to make it work? So, you know, I didn't want to repeat doing a Black Order run again. I mean, I thought I did that and I did the best I could on that. So it was time for a new challenge, and to motivate and stay fresh in my own mind, it was right, what can we learn next, and what's the new challenge to unlock? And so I picked Brotherhood.
So you talked about supporting cast there, but I noticed there's one omission in that. In a affiliation with currently four members, you're only bringing three of them. So why no love for Sabretooth?
There is great love for Sabretooth. He is one of my favourite characters in the game. Like, I love it. I think his model, until I see Cable in hand, Sabretooth is my favourite model. And I also really enjoyed the Sabretooth character in the X-Men series, the movies. Mm-hmm. But on the table, he can be situationally game-changing. It relies on high variance, in my experience, and he lacks significant consistency. So when I want to put him in, it's head versus heart. The heart says, yes, Sabretooth is great, let's put him in and have a bit of fun. But the head says, this guy is pretty bad in comparison to other four-pointers who can fulfill a similar role. So I had him in at the start of the season. Then I took him out, I think, midway through the season. Maybe it was the other round. Maybe I had him omitted at the start, and then I put him in at the mid-season update, and I took him out again for the finals when I had to play a bit more seriously.
Limits your squad building a bit, doesn't it? Because if you're saying you're always playing Magneto, and I know you've got Taskmaster in there as another option, but it means you're always playing a three. So you've got a 9 threat base, and then that either goes to 11 or 12, depending on whether you play Toad or Taskmaster. Does that make for some more difficult squad building?
Not really. I mean, one of the things that I toyed around with Sabretooth a lot was of the additional flexibility he gave the Brotherhood. You know, I didn't touch on it before, but one of the associated taxes I view Sabretooth is taking exceptional healing. I think he's a very vulnerable and fragile four-threat character without exceptional healing, and I don't think he can reliably perform his role of what I see as teleporting Magneto onto a point without that exceptional healing. So there's a bit of a double tax there of a suboptimal character fulfilling a role, but he's also fragile and comes with a card tax. So when I balance that against what am I roster building or squad building flexibility having him in there, when I compared that against really the squads I wanted to run with Brotherhood, it didn't actually impact it at all. The biggest one I found was the 15 threat. I really like Magneto, Sabretooth, and MODOK at 15. And that's mm-hmm. probably the main reason why I had him in my roster. But as you probably know better than most, a three-wide 15-threat squad is somewhat more reliant on dice and variance than having five-wide. So mm-hmm. I weighed all that up, and I decided that Taskmaster fulfilled a role of allowing that squad-building flexibility that didn't require a card tax.
Yeah, I feel... Sabretooth's got pretty good game into the traditional Wakanda sort of pushy round, which was you were relatively likely to see in the top 16. Someone, Pat, had Wakanda in as part of his list, and Travis is a big, big fan of Wakanda. And they've both made top four as well. So do you feel like maybe now you've got there, you're maybe missing Sabretooth, or do you think you've got good tools to counter that kind of control game?
No, I'm happy with the tools. I mean, the biggest consideration for Sabretooth for me was really at that 15 threat because, as I said, I wanted him there for Magneto, Sabretooth, MODOK. But then I speak about the variance aspect of that. Sabretooth is really a four-point objective sitter who's getting punched, pushed away from Wakanda, and then aggressive back onto a point. I mean, Sabretooth trying to damage Black Panther is almost comically... embarrassing, almost like a Wolverine into a Okoye, if you will, Jacob. Sorry, that's a bit close to home maybe, but I had the same experience with Sabretooth in that his damage output is wildly inconsistent and he's just a four-point objective sitter in that squad. So I look at other options that I can go to at 15 threat, and I think I have superior options with far more redundancy in variants and bodies that will perform the role better in most cases at 15.
That's absolutely fair. I guess I can get the I Hate Okoye badge. You got that club running, have you still?
I love Okoye. I've been on the Okoye train since she was released. I think I ran her in season one with Asgard. I briefly swapped her out to Rocket, I believe, and then Suna beat me with Wakanda because I didn't have a bodyguard for Thor. So the next round, Rocket was out and Okoye was back in. And I don't think I've ever not had her in my roster since.
Yeah, she's just so solid. No, I'm still a big Okoye fanboy, don't get me wrong. Something that's noticeable in if you look at your roster is of your unaffiliated options, discounting Taskmaster, you've got a lot of them have got throws. You've got Enchantress and Lockjaw and Valkyrie and MODOK all have terrain throws. How many throws is too many throws in a Magneto team?
Ooh, that is a good question. My start point with Brotherhood was let's have a throw party when I first started playing them. So I put in, you know, Valkyrie and Vision, in the scaling. And I tried, you know, leveraging maximum amount of throws that the squad could have. But I found that realistically, Magneto plus one is probably all you need most of the time. Magneto throws a lot of the terrain and can burn brightly by throwing terrain. But for the duration of an average four-round game, Magneto plus one can really throw the most things that are available on most maps. So I think having three throwers dedicated to leveraging that Brotherhood of Mutants Magneto leadership might be over-investing. But I do like, having said that, I do like the MODOK-Valkyrie combination because Valkyrie has that two power at the start of the game and she's very good at throwing a size two into a size two and generating four power across the team. And then negating the need for advanced R&D for characters like Enchantress or, you know, Mystique and Magneto and Asteroid M, things like that.
The other one that sort of strikes me as a little bit, I don't quite understand how you're using him, is Black Panther. What's his role in your roster?
He is a multi-role, flexible piece here. I spoke earlier about, there's a couple of aspects to it. The first bit I'll speak about is Sabretooth versus Black Panther. And so when I spoke earlier about Sabretooth of a long-moving character that can maybe sit on a point or teleport Magneto in, I was thinking about how often I actually really want to throw Sabretooth out to the wolves, have him there with exceptional healing to try and survive a hit and then Asteroid M, Magneto in. And it wasn't actually often I wanted to do that. So what I wanted was a four-threat character who could survive a few hits and do some bold plays, I think you call them, where you can go and steal an opponent's extract. And so when you think about a durable four-pointer who can survive a hit and a long mover, I mean, no one does it better than Black Panther, in my opinion. And that's really the role he fills in the squad there. So another thing I looked at was the top 16 finishes in the Swiss rounds. I had a look at how many Corvus with reality, how many Thanos with reality, and how many, I suppose, Angelas and She-Hulks were in there. And there were a lot. So my roster is relatively fragile. Like there's a few defense dice and some martial artist stuff in there, but they're not hugely tanky, the Brotherhood, in my experience. Magneto's inconsistent with his six dice defense. So I was lacking a tank. And so Black Panther fills that role for me and go, right, when I'm facing some of those characters I spoke about earlier, who did I hate facing when I played Black Order? It was Black Panther. So I could not kill him. So having him there allows me to be a little bit more bold and aggressive and have a little bit more confidence that he will survive a hit and can hold an objective or an extract for me. So that's, I suppose, the first aspect. And the second aspect is he actually gives me a cheeky Wakanda option, which is not intentionally why I brought him in there, but he does. And there's some specific scenarios where I would play Wakanda. With the roster I've got here of Black Panther, Taskmaster, and Okoye, I can scale Wakanda 14 through to 20 quite comfortably, and I'm quite comfortable with all of those squads and how they play. So on some certain crisis combinations and priority roles, I'm more than happy and willing to wheel out a Wakanda squad.
Although, no Wakanda Forever to go with that.
No, no, very strong card. Very strong, I suppose, objective-based card as opposed to an attrition card, I think, mostly, unless you're running Killmonger. So it's more about the durability of that Wakandan squad would be Panther, Taskmaster, and Okoye as the skeleton, all have effectively blanks as success in most cases. And then you can scale it really well with some other options there. So, you know, something like a Deadly Meteors, where I think Taskmaster might perform better than Shuri because he can get in close and sit on the point and keep rolling for it.
Yep.
You know, I think things like that where you could actually have an advantage against, you know, some other sort of similar Wakandan squads.
You've got both Asteroid M and Magnetic Refraction in your tactics cards list. Do you often play both of them, or do you find yourself favouring one or the other, or does it come down to the crisis in the matchup?
It's a question I grapple with almost weekly. I'm up to just shy of 70 games with Brotherhood, and when I started with Asteroid M, Magnetic Refraction, and Books of Truth, and Deception, sorry, so all four sort of affiliated cards that I thought were decent. Mm-hmm. I think that Magneto's, I want to call it Magnetic Crush, that's a bit of a casual card, I think, not a competitive one. So I started with those four, and I quickly whittled away Books of Truth, that was out, and then I played Magnetic Refraction probably for about 30-odd games and really enjoyed it on some scenarios, mostly the E-shaped scenarios and mostly when you have priority. But I found when I didn't have priority or were on a, call it a B or a D shape, where it's a bit wider and more spread, it was far less effective. So I've toyed with it in and out of my roster. I'm not sure what the right answer is. I think it's situationally excellent, but it's also situationally completely redundant. And I think the top 16 game I played with Refraction in there, I didn't use it once and it was effectively a dead card. So I think it's I think it's a good card. And I think if you want to run four wide Brotherhood on E shapes with priority, it's probably, you know, your number two pick after Asteroid M, maybe even your number one pick potentially. But I think if you're tending to run sort of five wide and a little bit more control in Brotherhood on some maybe wider scenarios, that maybe you'd give it a miss. So I've got it in my roster as a maybe take.
Brings me on to Deception. So you must have played a lot of Mystique and Deception. Is it an always take card with Mystique?
I think so. I've not come into a scenario where I've not played it. I could see some matchups where your opponent can easily counter it. And so things that I think counter Deception well is, especially on like on an E-shape, you can incrementally, you know, caterpillar walk your characters up. So you put the first character on the back shelter, the next character within range two, but securing the middle. So on shapes like that, it's quite easy to stop a round one Deception play. And then, you know, Deception might come into its own in round three or four, depending on how the attrition goes. Also, I think Lockjaw is quite good at countering that, in that Lockjaw could teleport two characters up the table onto an E-shape and leave them within range two so they can't be deceptioned off. But playing it just for the threat of it, I find the threat of having Deception in your roster and the positional threat of having Mystique on the board impacts your opponent's decision-making cycle and makes it harder for them to compute or calculate how they need to move their characters. So I like having it there as just either I can use it and get great effect against some probably lesser experienced players, but against more experienced players, it's going to be a little bit harder to get off and have good effect, but it's there to make their lives harder, not mine.
You're also running Hired Muscle as well as Panic, Panic Grips, so the Citizens Extract Crisis that goes with the traditional Hired Muscle play. How do Brotherhood play in that setup? How do they play with priority trying to run the Hired Muscle play? How do they play responding to it? And is it there as a genuine threat, or is it there as kind of a meta call or a feint?
That's a big question. So Hired Muscle is in there because if my opponent doesn't have a Hired Muscle answer of specific tools built into their roster, and I win priority against them, I'm going to, I'm not going to say abuse, I'm going to leverage the power of Hired Muscle to effectively win that extract game and have 3-1 citizens round one. Mm-hmm. And with a Brotherhood power generation through Magneto's leadership, I think it's very difficult to lose from there. So in the first instance, it's there as a bit of a kit check. Has my opponent got the tools to deal with it? If yes, mm-hmm. then I probably don't worry about it. But if no, then I'll leverage that to best effect. So that's the first part. The second part is it's also a bit of a counterplay in that if my opponent has hide muscle as well and they want to do the big hide muscle citizens play, if I feel I don't have the character combinations and abilities and cards to mitigate that or counter that, I can simply bring in hide muscle myself, potentially with advanced R&D, and steal a citizen back from them. So it's a little bit of a counter. So they're probably the two main things on citizens. On spider infected, I'm less wedded to hide muscle. I think, you know, Toad really allows me to get away from that a little bit. But the big part, and probably the main reason why it's in my roster, is I think it is essential for Merfisk. I can't see a way to beat Criminal Syndicate on, you know, Merfisk at 16, barring some very fortunate variants, if you don't have hide muscle on, they do. So for me, it's a must take based on Merfisk's scenario, but it also has an added advantage that you can punish those who don't have the tools when you're playing on citizens, and you can also potentially respond to their hide muscle play on citizens as well.
Hmm. For secures, you've got Gamma and Demons, which are those classic E shapes, and we know Magneto's great on an E shape where you bunch up and he can blow up the world against people and get great use out of magnetic refraction. So those are kind of locks and make a lot of sense. What's Infinity Formulas doing in your secure lineup?
Infinity's, I sort of bounced that one around a bit. I've flipped in practice games and my own mind between Infinity and Mutant Madman. That's the 18 threat secure there, where you need to sort of roll to secure it, not just sit on it. Mm-hmm. I found Brotherhood is excellent at 17. I really like my 17 options, and I really liked them certainly in Swiss as well. There's slight differences to them now based on Lockjaw versus Ghost Spider swap that I did. So I like Brotherhood at 17, and I like the B shape of Infinity, and I think Brotherhood's got some really good tools on there. For me, it was really a discussion with myself and my friends about, hey, do I want Mutant Madman as a bit of a soft Criminal Syndicate counter, or am I happy with Infinity? And the end result was is that I'm actually really happy with Infinity, in that Brotherhood has excellent power generation already, and this really throws them to the next level, and almost everything they've got is online on Infinity, and it's really a fully operational Death Star, so I quite like that.
Mm. It's interesting. So is that often your meta pick, your sort of call, I don't like playing into, oh, it's Wakanda, I don't want to play Gamma, and maybe I discard Demon, so I go to that. That third crisis slot I find is really an interesting one, because you generally have a plan for the first two, which is often a good well suited plan. I found that third one, I tend to use it as a, you know, like say a meta pick to go, well, this is my weak spot and this is what's good into them. So a lot of people might bring Demons in their list, for example, because they're worried about Web Warriors and they know that Web Warriors have to play a very different way if they're playing on Demons. Were there any, what were the bad matchups you were trying to mitigate?
So I generally agree with those comments, and that's generally how I approach roster building and having that third crisis as a bit of a counter on the secures. I really like playing on Extremis or the D shapes. So for me, it was a real toss up about Gamma, Demons, Infinity, and Extremis, because, you know, I find a lot of people aren't very good playing on D shapes. I think it's one of the most tactically challenging shapes to play on. And I found with a lot of practice, I can probably outplay most people on the D shapes. So I really like that there, but I don't think the D shape is great for Magneto. It's not bad. He can just sit on a point and probably dominate it, but it's not great that he can't influence other things once he's done that. So, you know, it's a long way for me to come around to saying I wanted a D shape in there, but I wasn't happy with some options just using Gamma as my only E, and I wasn't happy with Demons and some options if Demons was my only E as well. And then so I thought, what's the lesser of two evils here about Extremis versus Infinity? And I decided that Brotherhood are better on Infinity than Extremis, in my opinion, so I'll take that. So I don't think Brotherhood is weak on any of the secures that I've seen so far. And that's quite unique. Normally, other squads or rosters I've played, they seem to be weak on a particular set of secures, but I think Brotherhood's strong in all of them that I've seen. So I'm pretty secure agnostic, I suppose. I don't really mind which secure we play on. I'm happy to adapt my squad to the shape and the game.
It's interesting you were considering the Mutant Madman secure, because, I mean, my thoughts on that is probably, I think I haven't got as much experience as you, obviously, but it's a flip the portal using your physical defense, and so it greatly incentivizes you to bring a 4 physical defense character, or several of them, which there are plenty of. You know, there's lots of them, and most rosters have got access to multiple 4 physical defense characters. And that then means that your throws from Magneto and your largely physical attacks from your affiliated characters are then going to be less effective. So there's a kind of weird dysergy there in my mind, that if you're playing that with Brotherhood, then you're incentivizing your opponent to do something which makes your team worse.
Absolutely. And that's a great insight. And it's probably, I'd say that was in a part of my mind, but probably not the forefront. It was more, I really dislike the RNG secures. I think it turns a skill-based game into more of a luck-based game. So in the end, it was my dislike for RNG secures over, you know, I think that's an excellent point you've made, though, about, you know, the Mutant Madman influencing potential opponent squad selections and character selections to make them more resilient to my characters, but also more powerful on the actual secure.
So I see you've got hammers as well. So my standard question whenever I see someone with hammers, why are Brotherhood better with a hammer than any other affiliation? Because everybody loves a hammer. So why are they particularly good with hammers?
So I think two characters really stand. In fact, three characters. I think three characters excel at hammers. Now, the first one, I think, is Angela, because she can do her long move, pick up a hammer, and long move back to safety. And I think she's probably the best extract. In fact, she is the best extract character in the game. Whether you want to invest 5 points in an extract character or not is a personal preference, but I think Angela's number one. Number two, I want to say, is pretty close between Toad and Enchantress. So Toad has this wonderful ability where he can pick up a central extract and he can't be Amora's Kissed. Unless, you know, they have a throw or a web line or a deception or something, and the Enchantress can't reach him in the middle. So I think for that reason, Toad is excellent on extracts. He can also, a nice little trick Kenny G taught me, who's one of the guys who was in the central bracket playing Brotherhood and Thanos, is that with Mystique's leadership and advanced R&D, Toad can go up, pick up a central hammer for free, and then he can play advanced R&D onto himself from someone else, and then he can move, he can hop away, making him virtually immune to most sort of counter play or counter hits back to him. So I think Toad's extract play is excellent on centrals, and I think a great central is hammers. So I like that there. And I also like that I've got Enchantress in my roster. And as we know, Enchantress is really strong with that Amora's Kiss. And combined with the Brotherhood leadership, it's trivial for me to be able to generate her power to go and steal a hammer off my opponent, unless they have Loki, Angela, or Toad themselves. Amora is going to get that hammer off them more often than not. So I think I've got some really good tools in my roster to leverage that crisis. Needless to say as well that, you know, when Magneto or MODOK gets one of those hammers, it makes them demigods, which is pretty nice.
Just one to add to your list that can make you safe from Enchantress is Pentagrams is another one.
Oh, good point. Yep. You'd be pretty familiar with that one. Yep.
No, that's a good answer. Often I don't get good answers to that, and I think that's sometimes people put hammers in and say, oh, it's better with more dice, but rather than thinking through actually how that plays through. You mentioned there about Mystique's lead. I'm sorry, yeah?
I was just going to say it's a tough one. Hammers, I was looking at Montesi formula as well, because when you win priority and take, you know, as we know, the odd extracts, be it spiders, cubes, or Montesi or something else that I've forgotten, you know, you can really leverage that Toad piece there as well. But I just find it's a little bit slow scoring. So hammers it a little bit faster, which I think suits Brotherhood a little bit better. But anyway, sorry.
I mean, I can kind of see what you're saying. You sometimes go up 3-1 on hammers at sort of round 2, round 3. and you're less likely to go 3-0 on Montesi. Maybe that's true. But if your game plan is go and get two extracts and sit on them all game, which is kind of what Toad's going to do, then it doesn't matter whether you get whether there are three available and you get two of them, or there's two available and you get two of them, except that you're limiting your opponent's scoring. So,
Well, I think the hammers, I think most times I can, as I said, unless there's a couple of those things we mentioned before, Brotherhood with the setup I run, I can normally get three of the four hammers turn one versus maybe two Montesi. So, you know, it's just an extra point. It's not a lot. It's not as reliable, I suppose. So maybe there is a good argument to switch to Montesi. I don't know. I've been on the fence on it, so I'm happy to be wrong on it.
Just to dig into that on the hammers. So getting your sort of home hammer is pretty trivial. Going up with Toad and doing your Toad play to get a wide one, that's, again, relatively trivial. How do you secure the third hammer?
Enchantress. So unless they've got those things we discussed earlier, Enchantress just double moves and Amora's Kiss, be it through Magneto's leadership or advanced R&D, depending on you know, they're both in their roster, so adapt to suit.
Okay, that makes sense. You also mentioned Mystique's leadership. Have you had much experience with that, and what's your feel on when to choose which out of Magneto Mystique's leadership?
Another one of life's mysteries on when to choose which leadership. I thought this would be relatively straightforward to have a formula or go, right, when I'm playing on this secure, I'll use Mystique or whatever it is. I've not cracked that yet. As I said, I've probably had close to 70 games with them now, and I think I'd say I had about 10 with Mystique and the rest with Magneto. And sometimes Mystique's leadership has been really strong and been the difference in winning and losing. But that's maybe one or two of the 10 games. And I think it was actually recorded in, I want to say it was around five of the Swiss games for the Australian bracket. I used Mystique's leadership on Gamma, and it was very, very good. But the rest of the time, when I run Mystique, I wish I'd run Magneto's leadership, because that power generation just keeps the gravy train going. It keeps fueling the tactics cards. It keeps fueling the superpowers. It keeps fueling the big attacks and things like that. So I suppose my musings at the moment is that I like Mystique's leadership on maybe Demons Downtown, in that you don't have to sit on an incinerated back portal. Maybe I like it on Gamma sometimes. And I'm not sure. Initially, I thought I'd really like it on the D-shaped secures, just to leave your home point and go forth and conquer. But I've actually found that having power there through Magneto is probably more beneficial than just leaving someone on your home point. So I'm not sure what the right answer is, and I'd be certainly curious to hear people who think Mystique is better in certain situations, but I've not found it, and I just try to use the Force to determine, based on the character matchup, when we've deployed, to go, right, why would Mystique be better? And more often than not, though, she's not, I think.
Yeah, I've played a bit of Brotherhood as well, and I struggle with that too. I think something you didn't talk about there was, although you mentioned it earlier with the Toad play, is the way it plays in the round one extract game. And just that early generation, irrespective of which characters you're going and the throws you've got. Looking at your roster, you're chock full of throws, though, so maybe it's not such a big consideration. But maybe if you've had a different roster that...
Yeah, I think really, I mean, we sort of spoke about Magneto versus Mystique. I think one of the things one of the things I love about Brotherhood is they've got two separate leaders. So we talk about earlier in this interview about Sabretooth and Taskmaster and scaling. And what I really, really enjoy about Brotherhood is that I can scale Mystique as the sole leader and not run Magneto. And so when my opponent is looking at my, 14, 15 threat options, they go, hey, he can run five wide with Mystique, or he can run three wide with Magneto. And I can do a control-based game, or I can do an attrition-based game. And so Mystique can scale all the way to 20 for me as a potential leader, which throws some doubt into my opponent's roster building. So most of the time when I run Mystique as the leader, it's because Magneto's not in the squad.
And are there any particular setups that you found or threat values that you want to leave Magneto out of in particular?
Probably the low point ones are the ones where I have the, I suppose, the most flexibility in bringing him in or leaving him out. And that's based off the opposing roster matchup. So, you know, for example, against the Wakandan squad, I might leave Magneto out and take Mystique five wide. Whereas against a maybe an Asgard squad where Asgard can't go five wide at 15, maybe I'll go, hey, I'm happy to go 4v4 and Magneto's in there as the lead. And we also spoke about before when Sabretooth's in the squad, potentially go three wide and really go double down on that attrition. So it's just having an option there based on my assessment of what I think is the best matchup against my opponent's most likely 15-point squad. And really it's 14, 15, and 16 where I tend to leverage Mystique more, or at least want to really use her more there than Magneto based on the matchup.
That makes sense. So one final question for you. Have you got any tips on cooking steak?
I do. Do you have the Weber barbecues in the UK?
Are those the green eggshell ones?
Yeah, and you can get them with either gas or a coal or a wood fire one.
Sure.
Yep. Okay. So I've got a Weber gas burner, and my grandfather is a famous steak cooker of renown in Australia, at least. And he's taught me many steak lessons over the years. And one of his hot tips was go and invest in a Weber Family Q gas barbecue. So you don't get as nice of the charcoal taste in the gas barbecue, but you have what you trade in I suppose quality. It makes up for in efficiency. So it's really easy to set up, and you can follow a lovely guide because you cook on time, not on feel. You know, we talk about the thumb pinch, which I thought that was excellent advice, by the way, on your last cast. We cook on time as opposed to feel and visual. And it's a bit of a science, a bit of a pseudoscience, I suppose. But, you know, I like rump steak. That's my favorite. And I would suggest 4:30 in a Weber Q for a rump steak is where it's at. So you'll do 2:30 on one side, one turn only, 2 minutes on the other. Wrap it in some foil and a bit of, tea towel. Leave it for about 5 minutes and you have a perfect medium rare rump steak.
Good job. Well, Morgan, thank you again. Shall I book you in now for season 5, top 4?
You can never book ahead for that because there is so much luck in this game, despite being meticulous preparation and doing your best. As we saw in your top 8 game, sometimes dice say no. Not that that's the sole thing, but sometimes you just can't do it all. So I'd love to be here talking to you again next season, but who knows?
Well, good luck in your last matches.
Thanks, mate.
Well, that wraps it up for this episode of The Danger Room. We hope you enjoyed it and learned something to level up your next game. You can reach out to us on our Discord, Twitter, or Facebook. The links will be in the description. We have a questions channel on our Discord, so feel free to drop us some questions in there and we'll answer them on the show. Thank you for taking the time and listening to us. If you're liking what you hear, leave a rating or comment or even both. We appreciate any feedback to help us grow and become a better group to bring you the best quality content that we can. See you next time in the Danger Room.
Simulation complete.